You're listening to The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, bringing class to trash since 1977.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema. We are back, ready to talk about movies, like we always do. I hope you guys are prepared for that. We'll see, right? It is Will and Sammy, and we are here to discuss this is another off-the-cuff pick for this week. We grabbed, again... Will's got some stuff going on, some personal time off, so that kind of has just kind of put a pinch on the guests for a little while. So we're just trying to get some shows out, obviously. So we always have backup plans, and a lot of our backup plans are, hey, man, you pick something. Pretty much comes down to that, right?
Yeah, that's about right.
And then either me or Will go through probably some form of a watch list or a list we have for our own personal use, probably, or even a show list. Maybe we put stuff on a list for a show. I think Will talked about that a little bit. And so I just picked a streaming service and looked at my watch list and remembered that I had watched half of Night of the Bloody Apes and decided that's what we're going to do. Night of the Bloody Apes from 1969. So that's what we're going to talk about, which ought to be fun. A little Mexican horror. So good stuff. Had you ever seen that one before? Have you ever seen this one before?
No. Very familiar with it. Being a hip hop guy, R.A. the Rugged Man actually named his first album after this movie.
Yeah.
Rene Cardona, I wouldn't go so far as to say I'm a fan. I don't dislike his work.
Yeah.
1906, and God bless him for making sleazy Bloody Ape films in the late 60s. But yeah. I have seen some Santo film. We'll get into that. So I was aware of it. Nice to get kind of a... We don't usually do this kind of stuff, truth be told.
No, we don't do a lot of this. That's one of the reasons why I picked it. It's fun to do, as we say sometimes, some trashy stuff.
Yeah.
And Rene Cardona Jr. Make a lot of films, and if you haven't heard of him, you probably have and you don't know it. I think he directed 147 films that we know of, so I mean, the year Apes came out, he did 8 films, so there we go. Yeah, including a couple of Santo and versus Capolina and Santo and the Treasure of Dracula. We'll talk about that in a little while, like I said. And maybe a few that we have talked about. Have we ever done a Rene Cardona?
I feel like we've done Rene Cardona Jr. films. Like, we did. Did we ever do Night of a Thousand Cats, the Hugo Stiglitz jam?
I don't know if we did. I don't think we have, no.
Well, we did, but like stuff like that and The Batwoman and a few other films have kind of been mentioned on the show. His Santa film, you know, was kind of been mentioned on the show, I think, in the past. But yeah, this might have been a first.
Yeah, I mean, for those who don't know, Ray Cardona Jr., I mean, he directed 99 films by himself. So there's a lot of Cardona film work out there. Oh, yeah. A whole lot. And I guess Jr.'s probably mostly known for Tino Tara or
the shark one.
Tinto Tara, Tinto Rara, the killer shark.
Yeah,
Tintorera.
What is it?
Tintorera. So maybe Tintorera. Maybe that's not right.
Tintorera.
Yes.
And the glorious year. Yeah. 1977.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. We got Gorilla's King in there. Anyway, we'll talk about all that kind of stuff. I'm just looking. So, oh, he did Beaks the movie. There we go. 1987.
This is another notorious one. I'm a fan of, no joke, I got it off of Free Leech at CG many moons ago. The Incredible Professor Zovac.
Nice. Yeah, there's a lot of these things. Mexican, we haven't done one in a while. The last time I think we did one, I think Todd and I did the Mexican Ninja, right? So it's fun to go into Mexico sometimes. It's the wild, wild west down there. So that's what we'll be talking about. All right, let's play a little voicemail action. We got one here from the wonderful Walt Kafka. I'm going to get to here. I wonder if that's his real name. Anyway, here we go.
Gentlemen, it's Walt. Your celebrity obituaries this week, David Warner.
All kinds of people this
week.
And
wouldn't you know it, Paul Sorvino. Burt Young is looking over his shoulder. This is your weekly reminder that Burt Young was only 36 in Rocky. About The Gambler, yeah, really enjoyed it. Good film there. Reminds me that I actually have a copy of Dostoevsky's The Gambler sitting on my shelf. Maybe I should read it.
I don't know.
On the other hand, I still have about 40 Kremis left to watch. These decisions. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great week.
Yeah. Yeah, you could try to read that, Walt. I mean, I don't know. I've never read it, so I can't say anything about it. I've read some excerpts, but I've never read it, so I'll stick to the film.
Supply, I think, time being the premium that it's at. But yeah, it's I have not read it either. Maybe one day.
Yeah. The fact that Burt Young was so young in Rocky is still amazing to me. It comes up all the time. So there we go.
It was in the 70s, it feels like even the 60s, like that dude's 40. He looks like he's 62.
Yeah. people had a different interpretation of age back then, you know. Yeah, I mean, nowadays everybody's trying to stay young, but, you know, I think the human body does what the human body wants. But you can look younger, no doubt. Let's see here. Okay, that's the voicemails. What do we watch? What have we been watching? Will, what have you been watching? I know you watched a few things. That's all.
I did watch a few things. My goal this week was to not get shut out, not get skunked.
Yeah.
Past few weeks I've been skunked. Oh, I forgot I watched that. I actually had a pretty good week, man. 5 films.
Nice.
Read them in a week. I did listen to and hear some of the stuff I watched. So I started the week watching The Black Phone, the horror jam.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Ethan Hawke horror jam.
Yeah, it's got the great poster.
Yeah, has a great poster. I'd heard pretty promising things about this one. Earlier, many moons ago, I want to say, I don't know when, but some time ago. Okay, this might be a good one to watch with the family. And I got to say, I don't, you know, I should have known it being a Blumhouse picture. Mm-hmm. Blumhouse is what it is, right? Like, I feel like they're maybe a glossier version of like Full Moon or something. I don't see too many Blumhouse things that really light my world on fire. I think you get a certain level of quality, you know, like a 5.5, 6, maybe a 6.5.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This one really feels to me like it's an amalgamation of Stranger Things and what's that Saoirse Ronan films that Peter Jackson, I feel like, directed. Funny, is it not Funny Bones? What's it called? Something Bones, Strange Bones, or
no clue. I'm drawing a blank.
Lovely Bones.
Oh, the Peter Jackson film. Okay, yeah.
This feels like the love child of those two properties.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Underwritten. I think the young lead in it is fine, but it just feels very flimsy. And it feels that the Joe Hill story that it's adapted from is probably, like, some things are just best left on the page, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you get the right lion tamer working it. And I don't feel that Derrickson is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it wasn't very good. Next up was one that I'm sure you had low expectations for. I had, I wouldn't say high expectations, but I was excited to see. I remember about a year ago, William sending me a teaser for this, and I was like, oh my gosh, we're here in our sort of film-loving relationship as father and son. He's sending me trailers for things now. So
yeah,
he sent me the trailer for The Gray Man.
Oh, yeah, The Gray Man.
I was like, Baby Goose, sign me up.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Evans with a mustache, sign me up.
Yeah.
Ana de Armas, sign me up. But seeing this, it's a pretty propulsive film, and I think it looks better than some people are giving it credit for.
Uh-huh.
Feels that it is sort of slavishly devoted to globetrotting as a sort of international kind of black ops kind of spy film.
Uh-huh,
almost the point of parody. Like every 5 minutes you see like a title credit come up with, you know, Prague, Bangkok, you know, it's just like they really wanted to get their money's worth. I don't know. I now I'm beginning to question my reality here. I've always loved the Russos more than you. I love the stuff they did for Marvel. I thought it was fantastic. But seeing this, it feels like a very propulsive but flat film, if that makes sense. Like the stakes never feel really high. Gosling's fine. Evans is having a lot of fun. De Armas is great. Billy Bob Thornton's good in kind of a stoic father figure role, but I don't know. It was just okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I could have had more fun with it. I wish I had more fun with it.
Yeah, I think we'll end up watching it because Landon's at that age where he's interested in those kinds of things. And, of course, he does think, you know, he doesn't really, you know, I mean, he's not going to know the difference between the Russo brother film and some other films right now.
No.
So he's going to want to watch it and stuff, and I'll check it out. But, yeah, I'm not super pumped. I like the Gray Man series of books. I've read those. They're pretty good. They're kind of like Reacher mixed with James Bond a little bit. So they're pretty okay. They're very bare bones though, and I don't have a lot of hopes, but the cast does give me hope because I do like all the people in the movie. I do worry about, again, you know, the Russos just don't really, they just don't really light my world on fire. Everything just, it just looks like to me they could probably made it out of a television show and it probably would look the same.
That's maybe true.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a $200 million movie for the record.
So, I don't know if it looks like $200
million. Yeah.
I think it looks cheap. I don't, but $200 million doesn't go as far as it used to, I guess.
I guess not.
But they've been used to playing in big, like the big sandboxes for a while.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, somebody's going to give them $200 million. Even though I don't think that Apple film they made, Cherry, I don't think it was much of a hit for them either.
No. It seems like the further they ventured off the, you know, the Marvel sandbox, the less success they've had, to the point where their names are going to kind of become mud, right? Like they probably had the pick of the litter project-wise when they first got off that Marvel stuff, right?
Right, right.
So, I don't know. Disappointing, but, you know, it wasn't terrible. Just like a 6 for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Next up was a classic. It's Sunday. I'm doing housework. And I need something to watch. So I threw on a documentary. The poster caught my eye. Really fun poster. I think I caught this on Canopy. It's called Rangers 72. And it's about the Glasgow Rangers football club or soccer team, if you're in North America.
Yeah, yeah.
Glasgow Rangers, of course, from Glasgow, Scotland. Very blue-collar team. A lot of times when you get these sports documentaries, they're about, of course, Premier League or Serie A or La Liga teams. But this is a fun one. The Glasgow Rangers reached the highest heights of football at the time. You know, they won the, what's the equivalent of the Champions League, you know, which all the best teams from the best leagues compete in. So this is a really well-made documentary. I feel like the documentarians and the team they use aesthetically could venture into sort of feature film. It's a good documentary. It's engaging. It's fun. It's poignant in spots. But in saying that, I don't know how much mileage this will get with non-sports fans. Right? Like, it's not one of those that's sort of the triumph of the human spirit. Although it is, it's just, there's more emphasis on the nuts and bolts of the sport and the players and everything, I guess, that maybe wouldn't hit as universally as some things would, right? So,
yeah.
But very good documentary, though.
Seems like something I would like. Probably I'll need to check that out.
I thought of you when I watched it. It's a fun one. And like I said, the end, I'm not going to lie. Like, I had a lump in my throat. You know, you got to remember, like, this is 50 years on from this historic team. And a lot of these men are very old now, you know, 80 years old. So, like, it's, you know, so you get that sense of, you know, time is behind them and thinking about their lives as young men and their legacies and what they meant to the city and to each other. It's good, though. It's fun. I'd recommend this to people that like the 30 for 30 series. But as a non-sports fan, I don't know if I could necessarily recommend it.
Right, right.
Quite the same depths out of it. Next up was Braden's pick. And I thought he was going to pick Drive to rewatch because I guess he was feeling the baby goose like I was this week. But he pivoted and wanted to watch Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah.
So needless to say, I had to cover his eyes in a few scenes, some of the hotel party scenes. I can't believe it had taken me this long to see this film. just because of the subject matter.
Or maybe it got by you for so long you didn't realize how long it'd been.
7 years, dude.
I know, it's crazy. Even I saw you post it and I'm like, wow, has it been 7 years?
I know.
Yeah.
Crazy. So I'll say this about the film. I think it's well made. I think F. Gary Gray is a competent filmmaker.
Sure.
The cast, by and large, are very good. Corey Hawkins is good as Dr. Dre. Jason Mitchell is Eazy-E is great. Giamatti is Giamatti. Ice Cube's son, O'Shea Jackson Jr., looks just like his dad.
Yeah.
Doesn't sort of rhyme like his dad or flow like his dad, but that's okay. I don't know. This one, it's serviceable. You know, it's good, but if I was going to do a top 30 the year it came out, which I probably did, and I just didn't see this, it wouldn't have made my top 30. You know, it's fine. It's good. But to me, it was like maybe like a 7 out of 10.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I've always meant to check it out. Have not had a chance.
It's fine. You know, yeah. It's Netflix, right? You can do worse.
Yeah, I just think I'll wait until it kind of comes across my radar.
Yeah, you know, hey, you could do worse, but I don't know. That's just the way it goes. But some of the talent was good. Like, I really liked Corey Hawkins in it, and Drew Steve and other things, and Jason Mitchell and whatnot. And I'm glad the story got told, because I think musically their story is important. I remember growing up at that time, and I'm sure you as well. Just, it's hard to convey to my kids who really love hip-hop, and I got to give them a shout-out. You know, they're into some pretty good stuff, like, you know, William's getting into MF Doom now, which is pretty cool. But just to kind of convey to them, like, listen, hip-hop was not what it is today. You know, it hadn't crossed over into the mainstream, and these guys really grabbed sort of pop culture and sort of the world by the collar and said, listen, like, we have something to say. So, yeah, interesting, but that's, you know, it's good, not great. Last thing I watched this week, and I'd save the best for last. This was a film, it's a documentary of sorts. It's called The Man Who Skied Down Everest. Have you ever seen this?
No, I have not.
I was to do a top 30. This would probably be in the top 10 to 20 range.
Oh, nice.
Really fantastic. Really, really fantastic. I caught this on, I want to say Canopy again, maybe. This, I would say if you're a fan of like Sans Soleil, If you're a fan of the Kotze documentaries, or what's the other one I sort of compared this to? There was another one sort of similar, kind of a lyrical cultural observation. This looks at this man who, he was a Japanese alpine skier, very, very good at what he did. He wanted to ski down Mount Everest. The documentary is a lot of sort of narrative or voiceover from an American, who I guess it was reading from his journal. It feels like there's some creative license taken and some sort of editing or changing of events a little bit for a dramatic purpose, possibly, where that line between reality and fiction gets blurred a little bit. But I think this is a really fantastic lyrical documentary that kind of, I don't know, it's very poetic, right? And I think that sort of the metaphor of it, and it was really beautiful to me and very profound, I think. So, yeah, this was a very good one. I highly recommend The Man Who Skied Down Everest.
Nice.
That's it, man.
Nice. That was a good week.
Yeah,
good week. Some interesting things in there.
Yes.
Okay, I watched a few things myself. Managed to get some things in. Checked out Morbius. Yeah, the Morbius, man.
Morbin time.
It's Morbin time. That's right. So this one's become a bit of a, amongst kids my son's age, it's become a bit of a an ironic kind of joke to talk about Morbius and how great Morbius is and how Jared Leto's the greatest actor ever. And it's reached this kind of punchline level. And it's kind of funny to me because, I mean, I'm sure there was something like that when I was young. I just can't remember what it would have been. But
unironically.
Yeah. So I told him when it was done or when it was going on and stuff, I was like, you'll find that Jared Leto is not going to be the worst thing about this movie. You'll find that. I promise you that. Without even seeing it, sight unseen, I promise you he's not the worst thing in this movie. And he's like, he's the greatest actor ever. I'm like, yeah, I know you keep saying that, but what I'm saying is you'll find that he's not a bad actor.
No.
Some people don't like him because he's a pretty fella. Some people don't like him because he seems a bit, I don't know, for lack of a better word, a bit pompous, maybe.
Sure.
Full of himself. I get all that. I do think he's a good actor. I think he picks some odd projects sometimes. Sometimes I think he picks the wrong stuff, but
yes,
he had a pretty good run for a while, but it seems like he's a little off base right now. This movie it's fine. It's a comic book movie. It's not much different than any other comic book movie. It reminds me of most of the Venom films in particular.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me.
And it's not as over reliant on CG because it doesn't have to be as the Venom thing because of the symbiote suit and all that kind of stuff, but it does still feel like that a little bit. And it also feels like a film that was made I'm sure it's much longer than this cut. But they seem to be having fun, and the movie is not long. I think it was only like an hour and 40 minutes or something like that or something. Correct.
By comic book standards.
Yeah, which is awesome because that helps the movie tremendously. Like, it's kind of in and out.
Yeah, that definitely would benefit it. I just want to piggyback when you said about Leto. I think Leto is a good actor, but he just picks really, like, choices that almost seem like he's going to willfully pick the most ridiculous things and just see what he can get away with. Like that role in, I never saw the film. I hard eye rolled when I saw him in like the fat suit and the bald skull cap in House of Gucci.
Yeah.
It just seems like he picks things just to be offbeat and absurd.
Yeah. Like to really kind of go off the reservation, so to speak, really, with his performances. I haven't seen that one either. Some people have told me I have to see it because that performance is amazing. But I'll have to see it at some point. I just know there's a lot of American people doing Italian accents in that, so I can already tell what it's going to sound like.
Yeah, we already know what it's going to be. Right? I mean,
it's going to sound like American people doing Italian accents. That's exactly what it's going to be. This does have a fun credit I want to mention, though. It's one of the Screen Story credits. A guy named Burke Sharpless.
Burke Sharpless.
Yeah, great name.
That is.
Great name, Burke Sharpless. I like it. He's written a few things. This and Gods of Egypt and The Last Witch Hunter, film your dad saw, right? So
yeah,
I've always remembered that because you're like always like, yeah, my dad likes those kinds of things.
He does, man. He is as
nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. He's he doesn't have his nose in the air like his son does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're the B movies of the modern era. What's interesting about this this film is it's directed by Daniel Espinosa, who did Child 44 and Safe House with Denzel Washington or whatever, maybe, and Life, the kind of alien ripoff with so he's got a visual flair. He's got visual style. And so I think the film looks nice, and there's a couple really nice moments in the movie, but it's maybe just slightly above average. It's not amazing. Maybe like a 6 out of 10. Okay. Would I watch it again? Probably not. But if somebody wanted to watch it again and that was all we had, I'd probably sit down and watch it with them again. I've seen worse. I've seen much worse.
What did your son think about, like...
Well, he didn't really...
Did he kind of let down his...
He didn't really say nothing. He didn't really say much. Him and Jose, evidently, they're going to do a video on his YouTube channel about it. So we'll see what happens.
Heard about that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. We'll see if it materializes. He's got a little bit more technical ability than his pop. This podcast is about as far as I can go.
I feel like I'm getting quickly at the point where it's like my dad asking me to program the VCR. Yeah. I think I'm almost there now.
Yeah. I'll open an app and I'm just like, I have no time for this. Lane, what do I need to do?
Yeah, man. I know.
It's not that I can't do it. It's just I'm just too frustrated anymore to even bother. You know what I mean? It's just like
a million other things to do.
Yeah. I'd rather just open a book. That was so much easier. Just opening a book and there was a page there. And just now, somebody's like, oh, no, you need to open this app and then go in here and sign up for this. I'm like, I don't want to do any of that. I'm just too lazy. It's a sad, sad state of affairs. But anyway, Morbius wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't great either. Let's just go ahead and say that. I'll say this. If you don't like Venom, you're not going to like Morbius. So that's probably the best way to put it. Kind of keep it succinct and short that way. Check out the documentary. This is Guar. This is on Shudder. I've been looking forward to this one for a while, but I've been following it for a long time. Never knew where it was going to pop up. Finally, Shudder, I think, picked it up and put it on their service and stuff. I was a Guar fan as a kid. Went to a few shows. Got sprayed with blood and semen and everything else that they spray on you. It was pretty crazy. Pretty fun. You know, it's a young man's act. I appreciate it as an older man, but as a young man, it was all about the push to repulse people as much as possible. And that was much more interesting. That's much more interesting when you're young. That's usually the case. You want to be, you know, ironic and repulsive and maybe controversial when you're younger. And as you get older, you're just kind of like, you don't have no time for it. It's just like a waste of energy. But I do appreciate what they did. And this is a pretty great story of a band that kind of just formed out of nowhere and just kind of managed to maintain a pretty long, and I think they're still going, career, which is pretty amazing. Let's see. I think I watched one more thing. I watched Nope. Wow. How could I forget that?
Yeah, very excited to hear about this one.
So, Landon wanted to go see this, and I knew that he could probably handle it. Doing a lot of research on stuff, I knew, without spoilers or whatever, I knew he could probably handle it. There was a couple scenes that were pretty intense, but he got through them pretty good. This is one of those films where the less said about it, the better, so I can't say too much, because I don't want to ruin it for anybody, okay? I will say that I liked it a lot. I think it's very interesting, and it's certainly a risky project. I was kind of surprised at how kind of art house it is in a way. These are some of the things I've come away with it. I was kind of saying it's a deeper movie than you would anticipate. And I was kind of surprised by that. And it's well acted. Everybody in the film's great. As always, with Jordan Peele films, I think he's really good with actors.
He's excellent with actors.
Yeah. And he really, you know, he really trusts them, and he really kind of, I think, protects them because, you know, he makes them do some ludicrous things sometimes.
Yeah.
I think of what, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but that lady in Us where, you know, he gives her that doppelganger character who is really this kind of bizarre creation, right?
Not Catherine Moss.
No, I can't remember her name. But it's Lupita. Yeah, Lupita something, Ningo or.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Apologize for that. I just can't remember her name right now. I know I'm close though. But you know, she's doing this kind of ridiculous voice and really kind of exposing herself and stuff. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, how actors and directors have these relationships where they trust each other. And Daniel Kaluuya, he kind of, it's clear he trusts him and that Peele trusts him as well. He's really good in the film. It's a much more laid back performance from him than his last few that he's done. He's very laid back in this. Does a whole lot with his eyes, which he has great eyes. So does a whole lot with his eyes. Really great stuff. There's a little bit of comedy in here. This is going to be. I think it was a hit this weekend, but it's going to be a cult film because this is going to rub some. This movie's going to rub some people the wrong way.
Really?
I think so. Yes. Just from some conversations I've had, I only know one other person that's seen it so far, and that person did not agree with my assessment of the film. So,
wow. So, are you able to share? Sadie, man, come on. You killed the show.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be petted the whole recording.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable admitting either on or off the air who didn't share the same opinion as you?
It was Troy from Not a Bomb.
Oh, Top Gun Troy.
Top Gun Troy, yeah. Top Gun. Yeah, yeah. He'll Top Gun Troy. Maverick Troy. Troy Maverick.
Troy Maverick.
Yeah.
That sounds like a...
Yeah. So this is my opportunity to say that, you know, he didn't like Nope as much as me, and that means he's a Russian communist bastard.
That's right.
So there we go, Troy. That's for you, buddy. No, I just think it's a difficult film, and I think that some of the themes are on the surface, but I think a lot of the themes are under the surface. I will say this. We had a huge family behind us that had come in to watch this as a family gathering. And there was no young kids in this family. It was all middle-aged to older men and women and then their sons and daughters. And I would say it was about a family of about 11 or so. It was clear they were a family. They were calling, you know, you could just hear mom, dad, all these kinds of things. And they absolutely hated the film.
Really?
And you could just hear it behind us, right? You could hear the disdain for what they were seeing. And I can't say nothing, but there might be a reason for that. And I will not say nothing because I don't want to ruin it. So check it out if you're interested, and especially if you're adventurous. Landon liked it a lot. I like it a lot. He always, you know, everything's got to be a ranking for him. So he's like, well, what's your favorite Jordan Peele? I'm like, well, you know, I mean, I like Us more than Get Out because I like the way Us is shot more. Mm-hmm. I think this one might be my favorite, though, because this one's a bit more challenging. And it certainly went places I did not expect. That's what I'll say. Mm-hmm. A lot of places I didn't expect. So check it out. I think, I don't know. I'd be curious what you think of it. I know you're going to see it either way because it's Jordan Peele. So, I'm not worried about that. So nice. I'm just going to be curious when you finally do see it, what you thought. It's interesting.
I think we're in a pretty good time for genre filmmakers, right? That,
yeah.
Like you get your, and I'm drawing a blank and I suck so bad right now. Midsommar, what's the guy's name? What's your name, Mr. Director? Can't think of your name, and I can't think of. Oh, Eggers is the other one I was thinking of. Robert Eggers. And,
yeah.
I'm getting the other guy dirty now.
So it's just an interesting time because you got these young guys coming up, and Jordan Peele, you know, he's been around for a little while. He's been writing for a while, and he's been part of a comedy duo, and you know, he kind of fell into this horror filmmaking thing. But if you listen to him talk and you read interviews with him and stuff, it's very clear he's a film fan. Mm-hmm. And that comes through in Us, and well, it comes through in all of his films, but I think it might come through in this film the most. And it's interesting for that reason. So, I definitely recommend people check it out, but I think some are going to have mixed emotions on it, and some might absolutely hate it. But hey, he took a shot, right?
He took a shot. Ari Aster.
Oh yeah, Ari Aster. That's right.
Sorry, Ari.
Yeah, he should have a new film that rhymes. I didn't even know I didn't know you were going to be rapping on the show. That's Sorry, Ari. I know you like Ari the Rugged Man, but Jesus.
Yeah.
Don't drop the Sorry Aris on me. No, but yeah, check it out. Us film buffs are going to check it out no matter what, right? So there's certain filmmakers that even now, these modern filmmakers, we're going to check them out. So I think Jordan Peele's one of those guys right now. He's one of those guys where just about all of us are going to see whatever he does until he completely falls off a cliff, probably. And then maybe we might fall out of love with him like people did with Shyamalan and people like that. So, okay, that's all we watched. We're going to take a short break, come back and discuss Night of the Bloody Apes. What a great title. We'll be back right after this.
Yo, Greenberg, Doom, yo, I feel that baseline, cat. Yo, right, that's better, yo. That's some like Space Odyssey, yo. Some Stanley Kubrick type shit.
Spartacus, know what I'm saying?
You know, yeah, Dr. I feel Strange. That man's love. Lolita shit, Full Metal Jacket, baby. Stanley Kubrick, Stanley Kubrick. The track bouncy, nobody get more rowdy than Suffolk County. Peace to Crackhead Crowley, Honky Thomas, Pat McLachlan, the whole crew. Cat Marotta, what you gonna do? We roll through, fuck that. Big Earth, the midget face, drop em. Bring em to the poor Jeff house, stay on top of em. Nobody move this, I don't give a fuck, we untouched. Strictly lust for papers and live life to bust nuts when God kill us. Let's be realistic, we probably gonna be punished. We fucking bitches by the hundred. Why me? Wanna fight me? Try me. Why these people don't know me? Don't like me. Society, they wanna see me dead. I stick out. You see me in the public, I probably pull my dick out. Smack the fuck out.
Right.
Women see me knock your bitch out.
The ever so subtle vocal stylings of R.A. the Rugged Man.
Modern poet.
Yeah. Yeah. Modern poet laureate, right? I mean, if you're in the mood for that kind of thing, right? I mean, it's not bad. I've heard worse. I've heard much worse. Jesus Christ. I probably heard worse today. Yep. But, you know, yeah. If you don't know who Ari the Rugged Man is, have some fun. He's got a lot of stuff out there. You'll probably enjoy it. One of the biggest movie fans I know of in the rap game. I know that. I think he used to do like videos, YouTube videos and stuff of his movie collection. I don't know if he does that anymore. But he used to do stuff like that. He's a huge film fan. Huge. Like, I'm surprised. He might even have a podcast, and I don't even know. Maybe I need to look that up, right? Night of the Bloody Apes, original title, La Hora Palante Bestia Humana. That's what we're going with. Hora Palante? I guess that's right. Seems kind of a weird word for planet or blood knight or whatever it is. Yeah. This is directed by Rene Cardona, who directed a lot of movies. A doctor tries to save his son's life through a complicated heart transplant operation, the involuntary donor being a gorilla. I have problems with that right off the bat. Eventually, the young man turns into a violent hybrid beast. So, Will, you'd never seen this before. You kind of mentioned that in the opening. You knew about it from the Ari the Rugged Man album. You knew the title. And it's one of those ones where just about everybody knows the title. Or has heard the title at some point and probably thought, oh, I need to see that, and probably never got around to it. We got around to it. It's on Amazon Prime in a rather nice-looking print, for the record. What did you think about this? And did you think to yourself, oh, Sammy, what did you put me into? Or did you think to yourself, oh, Sammy, what did you give me?
Yeah, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Right. Yeah, this was like we had sort of alluded to. We don't always do these kind of schlocky films. Like this feels like it would be perfectly comfortable being nestled into like a Mill Creek box set or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
And just knowing what we know, I think it's interesting just to see genre film from around the world. Right. Like especially at an era when you didn't have as much bleed over culturally, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, there was some, certainly, but sometimes you tend to get more Western infiltration into films just because of how much it permeates through pop culture. So to kind of see something like this, I thought, okay, this should be interesting. the film opens up and it, like you said, great looking print. I wasn't really familiar with much of the cast. I mean, I'd have to do a real, I'd have to look and see what I'd seen them in.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, so I'll go into a little bit. I know a little bit about a few things. I don't know a lot. I'm definitely not an authority. We should say that right away on Mexican cinema. I know enough to be maybe slightly dangerous. Yes. But outside of that, not much. But we'll start with Rene Cardona, who who directed a lot of films. Like I said, 147. His first film was, I mean, it goes all the way back to 1930.
World War II.
Yeah. And then he acted a lot as well. He had 125 acting credits as well. He did a lot of acting in the 50s and 60s. Kind of a good-looking Latin man, born in Cuba. He's got a film called Marijuana. I mean, that he's in. I want to see Marijuana. I don't know that I've seen many of his films he was in. Oddly, I have seen films that he's directed, and I don't know if he put himself in any of the films he directed. It seems like it would be a waste if he didn't, but he might not have. Like Will said, we probably are, most people are probably more familiar with Rene Cardona Jr., who also directed a lot of films. But anyway, that being said, we had never done anything, and he is really kind of known for this guy who kind of grinds them out. He's kind of like a, I don't know, who would you compare him to? Kind of a, well, you can't compare him to somebody like,
I don't know. He's so prolific. I mean, he, you know, like some of the Italian filmmakers that we love, he kind of rode the crest as a workman filmmaker through a number of decades, right? Like 40s, 50s, 60s. I think he worked even into the 80s, right? So, you know, he just was content to keep working and working with small budgets and just keep churning them out. So much like your Fulcis or Lenzis or any of the Italians we love or some of the Americans. And Dusty, this brings up an interesting point, not to digress too much, but you notice when we talk about a lot of these genre filmmakers from specifically from Italy or even Japan or Spain, Mexico, etc., they tended to dabble in different genres while still sort of being under the umbrella of genre. It feels like most American genre filmmakers, they were horror directors. Like you didn't see, you know, Stuart Gordon make an action film and then make like a World War II film. You know, like they tend to stick within one genre. Like, what's his name? Like J. Lee Thompson did sort of action and thrillers.
Yeah.
It's interesting how other parts of the world they would jump around, much like Cardona does, right?
So. Yeah, they would just pretty much crank out anything they could crank out.
Everyone's going to turn a buck, right?
Yeah, anything that can make money, and that's pretty much what they would do. Probably the only actor in here that I am familiar with in any way is actually the guy who plays the monster himself, and that's Gerardo Zepeda, who played... he typically played monster characters, or he's kind of big and kind of bulky, kind of muscular. Looks like a wrestler a little bit.
Absolutely.
And he was in like stuff like the, you know, the Ringo Starr caveman film and stuff like that. And he's in El Topo, evidently is Bandito 4. I couldn't point him out in El Topo for the record. I'm not that amazing a film buff. But I mean, he's, you know, he's
Perdita Durango. He was in.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time, and been making films for a long time. He's got a look, and he died in 2013, I believe. But he you've seen him in something. I can promise you that.
Or you've seen him shirtless in something.
Probably, yeah. He's a bit of a, like I say, a bit of a muscular man. But he would pop up in, like, you know, just American films every now and then, just out of nowhere. Like, I remember he popped up in a Rosanna Arquette film that I saw. I can't remember the name of it now, but I remember I'm watching this film and it's like Rosanna Arquette and like John Lithgow. And then all of a sudden here comes Gerardo Zepeda. And I'm like, wow, how did he get in this movie? You know, so he would just kind of pop into things every now and then. I think he did that because, you know, he was a working actor. So he probably just tried to find whatever work he could. I am not familiar enough with the other folks. I do know the lead actor in this, the father character played by Jose Elias Marino. He did play Santa Claus in a film called Santa Claus,
which is another Rene Cardona film.
Yeah.
Fun one.
Yeah. And that's all I mean, I'm just going to be forthright. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you guys like I know all these people. I don't. I really don't. Most of these people are unknowns to me. And maybe I've seen them and stuff and I just don't recall. But that's because some of the charm of the movie is that, though, too, because these guys, there's some amateurish acting, but there's also some really good acting in spots in here, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, for what the film is, I'm not going to sit there and say it's Oscar worthy, right? But there's some decent genre acting in here.
Yeah. No, there is for sure.
I think the dad does a pretty good job. I think he does a pretty good job playing this character who's really worried about this son and this issue and all that kind of stuff.
The weight of what his son's going through. And in that way, it's kind of reminiscent of something like Eyes Without a Face, right?
Yeah.
It's funny. This film to me is a little bit Eyes Without a Face. It's a little bit Wolfman. And it's a little bit
Frankenstein.
Capitalize on Planet of the Apes films. Like
Planet of the Apes. Yeah.
Right? It's 60. So Planet of the Apes is what, like 68 or 66 or something? I'm just spitballing. Feels like it's right around this time.
Yeah.
Right, Sadie Mac.
Yeah, he's
68.
Yeah, these guys. I mean, this film, it is schlock. I will say that it is schlock. There's no doubt about it. But I gotta say, watching it this time, and I had seen it once before, kind of like on VHS or something. It's not like grade Z schlock. It's a watchable movie. I think it helps because it nails all the kind of exploitation elements, right? Mm-hmm. It's got gore. Matter of fact, it might surprise you with the amount of gore it has. It has that trick of using actual surgery footage.
Yep.
So that's a little shocking at first. Mm-hmm. It's very ham-handed, for the lack of a better word. That might be a pig, as a matter of fact. I don't know if it's a human being or a pig. I know pig hearts are similar to our hearts, so it might be a pig. I don't know. The skin was awful pink. I don't know if you thought so.
I thought it was very pink. That's good. Yeah. I was wondering the same thing.
Yeah. Two in the pink? No, never mind. Anyway, it's one of those things where it kind of mixes everything in there, and then it has nudity, and then it has almost like a bestiality element to it. So it's nailing all the exploitive elements. The question is, I guess, at 83 minutes, is it watchable enough and entertaining enough to be really more than just standard schlock, more than just, I think, a catchy, great title. So I think it's what we'll find out as we talk about it here.
Yeah. So interesting credit, medical apparatus and supervision. You don't see that so many times in films. Cardona, it's weird. This film at points is very kind of stilted and wooden. In other parts, that, like, the blood spatter and sort of the violence is almost enhanced and made to feel starker and more shocking because of how kind of stiff the film is and very sort of conventional it is in other parts. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it just feels more shocking.
Well, I think the problem with most of these films, these kind of schlocky films, and I think you'll agree with this, like the films of like Ted Mikkels and people like that, is there's these kind of Jess Franco, these kind of guys. There's these moments that are really cool, but then there's just so much stuff that's just filler. And, oh, it's just so much, right?
Yep.
And this film suffers from that, too. I mean, it has a lot of filler. At times, you're like, come on.
Okay, so that's the problem. Even at its runtime, I felt its runtime.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It feels like, because there's kind of these two plots. Like, there's the whole detective with his wrestler girlfriend plot, which is really fun.
Uh-huh.
But go anywhere, and made me questioning, like, I don't want to take two separate films and put them together to make one film, like Godfrey Ho style.
Maybe.
Because it just doesn't feel like it really goes anywhere. Like, I get that there's a little bit of a through line, but it just feels like it's really just filler because he didn't have enough ape man and tormented doctor father footage. So let's get a female wrestler. And that stuff's kind of fun, but I feel like they could have done more with that.
Yeah. I felt that too, because I don't understand. You start the film, you think you're watching in like a female wrestler film. There's a major moment that happens where she throws some, this is not a spoiler, she throws another wrestler out of the ring. They get hurt. Now, this sets up the quote-unquote transplant.
Sure.
Or no, it doesn't really set it up. I think it helps, right? I'm not really sure what they use the female for. Do they use the female for something?
I don't think so.
Because they take the heart out of the gorilla, right? Or they take it out of the female.
So they break into this zoo.
Yeah, let's go back to that, because first of all, it's not a gorilla.
It's an orangutan. Right?
Yes. A big one at that. A very big orangutan, yeah.
Sure.
Well, it's an orangutan until it gets shot, and then it's a man in a monkey suit.
Yeah, it should be Night of the Bloody Orangutan.
Which is a great title also, but for the record.
It's evocative. But they get past like what's just the most the worst nighttime zoo security in the history of cinema. Use this kind of old-timey gun with like tranquilizer darts. They shoot it from way far away.
It looks like the rifle Ralphie got. So it was like the BB gun.
This bolt action thing that just looks like really antiquated, even for 1969.
The way this guy falls over and the sound effect, the guy in the monkey suit, is classic bad movie cinema. I mean, it's, he just falls over. Oh, I love that you said nighttime zoo security. There's some things you just never know you're going to say on a podcast, and that's one of them. I laughed so hard just now that I had to turn the volume down and step back from the mic a minute. So
really lacking.
Yeah, it really is lacking. I mean, the rating is going to be way low on the nighttime security.
See, this is where I would have loved a 2-minute sequence of them casing the joint, like binoculars and like the bread van, looking, seeing when the shift changes happen. Then they bust in, and these guys weren't moving quick. Like, these are older gentlemen.
Yeah, one of them's got a bum leg, as a matter of fact.
Bum leg.
Goyo, he's got a scar and a bum leg.
Yeah. He's got a bum scar and...
I don't know if he had a scar. I don't know if he had a bum scar, but it's possible.
Yeah, he may have been shot with a few of those strangling darts in his day. But, they use this rifle, and like I said, at this point, I'm still wondering how the dots are going to connect, and... We get this lab, and it's a pretty classic lab, and I guess this is where the medical apparatus and supervision credit comes in.
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty good lab. And it's funny because it almost feels like this is kind of in the arena with something like Untamed Heart. Right? Like the baboon heart.
I mean
that was more...
That's a much different film, but that's even a much different level of talent.
How about when Christian Slater catches the hockey puck at the New York Rangers game barehanded?
Dude, there's no moment quite like it. I'm getting chills right now.
He didn't blow it.
Yeah, he didn't. I'm getting nighttime security chills. Nighttime zoo security chills right now.
I remember they do it in slow-mo, man. He rises up and catches that puck.
I remember it, too. It's funny. I've seen that film one time in my life. Yep. I never want to see it again. It really has nothing for me to want to rewatch it. And yet, I can remember that moment like it was yesterday.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. But, again, power of the A-part, right?
Yes. So, yes.
There you go. However, this A-part, this takes a different turn. Instead of... what's the word I'm looking for? Inspiring our protagonist to previously unfound athletic heights. It turns him into a rapey, violent maniac.
Yes.
Not to mention, it somehow gives him an ape head.
Yeah, yeah.
Like bruiser wrestler body, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So where this film loses itself is...
In the music? No, sorry.
Yes, it does.
Like Eminem?
The Mom Spaghetti was on his son's pajamas.
Yeah, there we go.
But if this had really been unrepentantly sleazy all the way through, it would have been fantastic.
So this is where me and you are in simpatico here. You hate to say that sometimes because you want to think, you know, we're above that, right? But I don't always want to think that. Sometimes I want smut. Sometimes that's what I want in a movie. Yes. This poster, this title, and everything, I wanted this to go one step further than it did. It goes pretty far. It's not something that I'm going to watch with my son anytime soon or anything else. It goes pretty far. There's no doubt. It is what it is. But it felt like it needed more of that. And I know that we're not going to spoil it here, but if you see the film, you're going to think, oh, God, why do you need more of this? Well, I think that would have made it more exciting, and it would have made it stand out more. As it stands, it's just kind of, it's got a few good moments, and it's just kind of middle of the road. And really, the reason why you remember the moments you remember is because they are shocking. And if it had more of that, I think the film would be more memorable. Mm-hmm. For the record, I don't think this movie's bad. Certainly not as bad as you would think with the word schlock being thrown around. I don't think it's good. I mean, I don't think it's great. I think it's watchable. I do think that. I don't think it's watchable a lot. I don't know what the word I would use for this film is. I guess it's 83 minutes I didn't mind spending with it, but I don't know that I'd do it again. But if you like, good-looking Mexican women running away from a beast-like Frankenstein wrestling-looking character.
With various degrees of success.
Yeah, I mean, you could do worse. And there's...
Being not various.
Yeah, there are some good kills in the movie. I mean, there is some of that, right? I mean, there's some pretty good moments. I think he rips a scalp off, and I think he does a...
Yeah, to a cop. He just rips this cop's scalp off pretty effortlessly, and that's a pretty good kill.
Yeah, that one is. And then I think the... then he rips somebody's throat out at some point.
I think so. He's a bruiser with the ladies, right? He's a wild man. I mean, I think if this had been made in Italy with George Eastman in the son a part role, could have had something.
Well, yeah. So therein lies the issue too, right? I mean, I think it's just, Rene Cardona kind of just probably, I totally agree with you for the record. I think that he may have had half of one film, half of another. I mean, this might be half of one of his films and half of another. And, yeah. Like Godfrey Ho, put some things together. Because this is true exploitation. This is an exploitation film through and through.
Absolutely.
And it's just kind of mended together to kind of get a story. It's 83 minutes, so it's relatively short. Although, like Will said, you will feel the length of this thing. But there's... I don't know the word I'm looking for. There's... I don't know. There's something about it that makes me... And maybe it's the Frankenstein story elements of it, the father-son thing. And maybe, I mean, they throw in a child in danger toward the end and stuff, and kind of up the ante and stuff. And
Frankenstein and it's Wolfman.
Yeah, yeah. And I think because I know those films so well, I think there's a part of me that may like this more. I don't know this for a fact, but I may like it more than you. But I don't know. This is a really tough one for me because I don't know. I didn't even write down a rating yet because I'm kind of doing it as we talk because I got done with it and I was like, woof. And then, but then as I've thought about it the last couple of days, I've kind of been like, well, it has certain charms, at least for film fans like us. And, this is a good example of what we talked about when we started the show of the, how much we love like the Akira Kurosawas, but we have room on our plate for the Rene Cardonas. Because we love movies, and this one kind of reminded me of that. It's not bottom of the barrel. I mean, it's not it's not way high in the barrel either. It's definitely probably mid barrel somewhere or lower. But am I making sense? Am I making any sense here whatsoever?
Oh, no, you're making. There's fun to be had here, but you have to temper expectations. Know that you're getting a filmmaker who, at this point, I think. Society in terms of our sensibilities and the ability to shock and awe an audience, or probably those days were kind of behind him, but there's a valiant effort made and there are some scenes that are genuinely shocking in the context of the film and otherwise that give you that exploitation kick that you need, but they give you enough that they leave you wanting more instead of leaving you satisfied because the other stuff's pretty wooden and just listless, right?
Yeah.
It's like an ape man in pajamas wandering around a house looking for something to do.
I'll be right back. Yeah. Right. Whoever that is that said that, be careful wherever you go.
You should be careful wherever you go.
All right, go ahead.
So, yeah, it's really akin to an image we get in the film. An ape man in pajamas wandering around listlessly, a little bit uptight, should undo a few buttons, but doesn't. I think that kind of encapsulates the film in a lot of ways.
I think so, too.
How about a couple final things? Homeboy bonks his head on a nightstand pretty hard.
Oh, man. Does he ever? Yeah, yeah. It looks like it hurt.
It looked like it hurt. It feels like a Fulci bonk. Like,
yeah.
Fulci would like drag someone's face down a cliff in his films.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would have been a Fulci bonk if he would have lost an eyeball.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, for the record, there's like a marshmallow eyeball that gets squeezed out of a head in this movie, too.
And there's possibly marshmallow teeth.
Yeah, man, there's all kinds of... The gore is pretty wacky. I mean, it's not going to blow your mind, but it's out there.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's crazy, you know, some of the stuff that just comes out of nowhere. And it's funny, though, just as a Catholic country, Mexico has to kind of make it a little bit of a cautionary tale about playing God.
Yes, yes. They kind of get that in there toward the end, don't they? I find that fascinating, actually. That they kind of went that way. But, of course, that's what the Frankenstein story is. It's kind of a mankind's warning of playing God, right? So they kind of come back to it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But those are all my notes, dude.
All right. I don't have a whole lot to add. I think I've added enough, as we said. But I do, like I said, I do think the performances are pretty good for this kind of movie. And I do believe, in my opinion anyway, the lead performance from Jose Elias Moreno, it's one of those performances that's almost better than the movie itself. Like, look, it's not De Niro and Taxi Driver or Raging Bull. It's not Pacino and Serpico or Cruisin' or anything like that. It's definitely not that. But you got to think about what kind of film you're watching here. And a lot of times the acting in these kind of films is pretty bad. But I kind of felt for this character, and I don't know if it's because I'm a dad or what, but I kind of felt for him, and I thought he did a pretty good job. I think kind of easing the emotion. I mean, he goes for the gun a little too quickly, in my opinion. He's a little aggressive there, but, you know, and he has no love for the simian race at all, the apes and the orangutans and stuff. He has no love for them, that's for sure. But I think he does a pretty good job in the movie. I just think that the problem is, and you said this already, the pacing is way off. It's just way off. There's just moments where they're just kind of standing around talking. It's not real interesting conversation. They kind of say the point, and then they kind of just keep going on and on about the point. And it's just kind of like, well, what's going on? Well, you know, why are we still talking about the same thing you brought up? And it just keeps going and going and going, and then they finally get to the next scene. I think the shocking moments and the exploitation moments work, and they work well, and those parts of the film are a lot of fun. I think the general setup of the film is fun. I just think the execution is sloppy, right? It's just not quite there. But as far as a kind of a curio piece in movie history, it's kind of fun. I was reading some of the trivia and stuff, and they said it's kind of a remake of one of his films called Doctor of Doom, which I've never seen.
Nor have I.
Which is interesting. I think Doctor of Doom came out in 62, and I don't think Doctor Doom hit the Marvel thing until 64. I might be wrong about that. That might be the same year, but could it be possible that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby ripped off Rene Cardona?
Highly probable.
Who knows? I mean, right? Who knows? But anyway, this film was also kind of, as when I was a kid, this was on video, and it was sold as it contains extreme and explicit violence and nudity. So we would rent it sometimes, and I could never really get through it. I finally watched it as I got older, but as a kid, we'd rent it, and it just never could. It never spoke to me as a kid. It wasn't exciting enough, right? As an adult, I was able to watch it because I loved films by that point at a different level than I did as a child, and I was able to watch it. But I got to say, the use of the real surgery footage and stuff, it is pretty hard to watch if you're kind of sensitive to that kind of stuff, because they're really using scalpels on skin, and it's a little rough. It clearly is from another film, a surgical film.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It's interesting. But, I mean, it is the kind of schlocky movie in a way that, like you said, they go there's no nighttime security at the zoo. They go there. They shoot a ginormous orangutan. Cut to the lab, and it's a gorilla and a guy in a suit laying on a gurney. It's like, did you even think that people would not notice that you shot an orangutan and then you brought home a gorilla? It's very strange, right? So
I think it's, yeah.
And it's got moments, it's got like Ed Wood type moments in it. I think there's one moment when that one girl's running through the park and her dress is falling apart. If I remember right, she falls on the ground. You can actually see the grass move. You can see it like carpet. So they're shooting on a set, you know. So you can see the grass all shift. Because this big wrestler guy is running behind them. So that's kind of interesting. I had a good time watching it. I'm looking at the surgical. So the features, that's an actual human heart transplant.
Really?
So it's not a pig. It is a human being. I thought that skin looked really animalish to me.
As a matter of fact.
Yeah. So it's kind of weird. And I don't know that I wanted to see that. I don't know how you felt about it, but I don't know if I wanted to see that. I don't know if that was I never really remembered any of that. Maybe that was in the video or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, it looks like so Doctor of Doom from 63. This is the plot synopsis for that film. A mad scientist terrorizes a city by kidnapping young women with his ape man Gomar and then using them as subjects in sadistic brain transplant experiments. A female wrestler whose sister was one of the victims swears vengeance against the mad doctor. I mean, that sounds amazing, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'd watch that. The poster's amazing. I'll tell you that. You know, maybe someday we will watch it. I don't know. Well, you know, we stick around long enough, we'll see all these. And Gomar, for the record, is played by Gerardo Zepeda again.
How about Gunan? Shout out to Gunan. Unrelated, but Gomar reminded me of Gunan.
We always got to bring up Gunan, yeah. A film we've never covered, but we love to reference. The Gunan. Man. Yeah, but I don't have a lot more to say. I'm glad we watched it, though, because, like you said, we don't do a lot of schlock, and I kind of like doing these every now and then because they're kind of fun. I mean, yeah, you it's a roll of the dice when you do them. Sometimes you get some absolute garbage. We've done a few of those. But every now and then you get something that I think is kind of quaint and kind of cool and for what it is. For me, this is one of those. I mean, I've seen worse films. Definitely, and I've seen worse films that we've reviewed on the show than this one. But it's not amazing. It's not for everybody. But if you are adventurous, I think you'll dig it. So I'll kick it over to you for Make or Breaks, MVTs.
All right. Make or Break is the first act of violence. I mean, we're watching this thing, and there's the fun female wrestling, but that doesn't really pan out. Get a lot of kind of stoic kind of dialogue in the lab and ape hunting and shoddy security and stuff, and you know, but none of it really is this kind of visceral thing that we want as kind of genre film fans. So that's Make or Break. MBT is the mayhem with the ape man. He romps, he rapes, he pulverizes people, he scalps people. Fun, right? That stuff's fun.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's like when you ask for a grilled chicken Caesar salad or a Greek chicken salad and they give you like barely any chicken. You're like, this isn't bad, but I really wanted that chicken.
Yeah. That's a good example.
My score for this one's a 6 out of 10. Not a great film, but there's enough in there to really, you know, to have some fun with. It's definitely not one for kids unless, you know, bloody kind of rompy, rapey stuff, you know, is soup du jour at home. But, this is a schlocky late 60s Mexican film, something we've probably never covered on the show, it feels like. I mean, we've done a few Mexican films along the way, which I quite love, Intrepidos Punks and...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Legendary.
The Mexico has a whole history of cinema that really is ripe to be rediscovered, right?
Rich and untapped. Listen, there's so many cop films and 80s kind of sleazy Mexican films that I'd love to cover, but they just have never gotten even fan subs. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this, though. I'll take pound for pound. Mexican movie posters are some of the greatest movie posters ever made.
Oh, really?
Oh, dude. I mean, they are amazing. I mean, the poster for this is amazing. Several posters for this are amazing. They really sell their films on their posters. They're cheesy posters, don't get me wrong, but they're amazing. If you just look through Mexican film history and look at the posters, they're amazing.
Hand-painted, right?
So. Yeah, hand-painted, hand-drawn. They really, I mean, the films are almost never as good as the poster.
But that's the case with most things, I think.
Yeah, but that was that era, and that's what you did. And I love that on the IMDb it says worldwide gross $171.
Come on.
That was worth saying just to hear you say come on.
$171.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Wonder how much it costs. Probably not much more than that.
Investment not there.
Yeah, make or break for me. That first violent attack, that's what you're here for. That's what it needed plenty of. I mean, there's a lot of it in here. I don't know, I think I need a more rampaging ape man though. Need a little bit more. Obviously we didn't mention that it's inspired by King Kong as well. Because it's, you know, an ape, and then he does end up on top of a building at some point. MVT. I'm going to go with the dad guy that played the dad, man. I liked him. Jose Elias Moreno. I liked his performance. I really did. I think he gave it his all in a subpar movie. And I have a lot of respect for that. I have a lot of respect for people who come in and are like, you know what? This movie's garbage, but I'm going to give you everything I got. And I think he does. I think he does. I really do. My score is a 6 out of 10.
Just the same as mine, man.
Yeah. I like it. I mean, it's fine. I would show it to somebody. Like, if somebody said, hey, I want to watch, like, something trashy, I'd be like, okay, well, this is an option. I think it's a fun little film. And, again, 83 minutes, it's not incredibly long. We've done worse on this show, no doubt. So check it out, Night of the Bloody Apes. All right, man, that's everything. We are not sure. I am not sure exactly what we are doing next week. Will be out of town and be traveling with his family for the next couple weeks. So we have another backup review, but I don't want to burn that bridge yet.
No.
Because Will and I have very busy lives, and we never know. And we're trying to find a way, even though we may not have talked about this much, we have talked about in the past, we're trying to find a way to rebuild that bank, because that one extra episode will be used at some point. We just know it will, because we know our lives.
Sleeveless shirts.
Yeah, so we know that's going to happen. We just got to find a way to get some extra reviews recorded. But because we don't want to miss a week. We love putting a show out every week. That's why we went to the one film, just to kind of accommodate and make this happen. Someday I'm sure we'll go back to the two film format. We love talking to each other, so I'm sure it'll happen again. But just for the time being, this is what it is. So I don't know what we're doing next week. So it could be a surprise. I kind of have an idea in place, and I'm kind of kicking around some things, but the scheduling has all got to work out, and a few other things. So we'll see if that happens. If not, something will come out next week, I promise you. And we'll keep rolling. Not really much else to say. Will, safe travels. I hope you have fun. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to be with you. But, yeah, I hope you enjoy seeing some of our friends, as I often do when we go travel. And tell everybody I said hi. Give them a hug from me, obviously. And enjoy yourself, and just be careful, man. As always, just, you know, enjoy the wonderful world we have here.
We're very lucky to have been part of and helped to create something, a community of wonderful people that have similar passions for film and are uniformly wonderful people. Just yes. Feel very fortunate to have been a part of that thus far.
Yeah, we are extremely lucky, guys. Extremely lucky. We have I wouldn't even call them, I don't know if I call them friends. I just call them a family at this point, because that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Just one big old family. And I know those people are always there for me, and I'm always there for them. That's the great thing about it all. Okay. With that, I'll say the famous words that I always, the famous word that I always say, and that is adios.
Adios.
Adios actually makes sense for this review.
I was going to say that.
Thanks for listening. You can find the gentleman at ggtmc.com, and you can email the gentleman at midnightcinema@gmail.com.
Yeah.